mindset means to me. It's how you perceive the world, what happens when you do, and how you react to it.
Unconventional Life, the show where I interview successful entrepreneurs, artists, creatives, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. We will explore how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck. I'm your host, Joel Schroeder.
Unconventional Life, welcome. This is your host, Joel Schroeder, tuning in today from Boulder, Colorado. Today's guest is joining us from Edinburgh, Scotland. We have got Joe Trodden in the house. Joe, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
I am indeed, Jules. Thanks very much for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, really excited to dive into the conversation. Even our little warm-up before we turn the recording on has been quite fun. And for those of you that don't know Joe, he is the CEO and founder of Mindset Experts, a business that helps entrepreneurs find their next level leader by developing business strategy and entrepreneurial mindset. And Joe, I know you've helped, you know, over 300 entrepreneurs in the past 10 years really work on what is their strategy and learn that inflection point, you know, to really scale. And I know you believe mindset is the single biggest factor in success for entrepreneurs. And, you know, for those of you, the time that we're in right now, you know, with all of this coronavirus and, you know, pandemic stuff that's going on, I think more than ever, you know, I've noticed in my own self, it's like with ourself and our mental stamina that really makes or breaks how we show up in our life and in our work in the world. And so I know you really are there to offer reinforcement with entrepreneurs at different stages and helping them really reach their full potential. So welcome to the show. Fill in any gaps that I might have left out and give us a glimpse into your personal life.
Cool. So yeah, I work with entrepreneurs. I, over that period of working with 300, I find that I add the most value to the ones who have got through their startup phase. You know, they're a couple of years in, they've got a traction point, they've built a small team there, but then the game really changes. There's a transition from entrepreneur to entrepreneurial leader. There's a transition in the business where it becomes more its own thing. It's its own entity rather than purely being an extension of the entrepreneur, which is kind of what it's been to that point. There's also a lot, you know, too deep, too early, but there's also a lot of really interesting sort of power dynamics in a business at that point around who can actually challenge the entrepreneur and, you know, have they actually assembled people around them that feel they can, they're in a position where they can actually do that. So there's a lot of really interesting dynamics there. One thing that's critical at that point is that entrepreneurs tend to be visionary by nature. I mean, of course they are, right? They see a different future. And it's my job to go into businesses and make sure that they keep looking out the way and creating the future. Because as soon as you turn that visionary creative lens inward, you start destroying everybody's processes, you know, and creating confusion because there's 100 other ways you could be doing things. So yeah, my job's to work with them at that inflection point, keep that visionary mindset pointing out the way and create the scaffolding almost behind them as whilst we develop them on their leadership journey.
Yeah, I love that. And listeners, we'll definitely be diving a little bit more into that as we go on here. But Joe, I want to start off and really define, you know, mindset, because I think, you know, to some people, we all have different relationships to that word. And you know, in recent times, it's also become like a buzzword to some degree. And so I know you have definitely your own relationship to it. So how do you define mindset? And, you know, just for the frame of this conversation, what's the context for how you use it in your work and how our listeners can relate to it?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I don't know what to do with that word anymore because, you know, it said my name and it's so important, but it's the semantics on it are so diverse now. You know, with advance apologies to anybody who is posting on Instagram with the yoga pose and the nice quote, like, I you know, that stuff's cool and it gives you that moment of inspiration at times. But mindset for me is like everything. Mindset is your full cognitive function. It's not just like a positive mental attitude. It's everything that's going on inside your head. I don't know if you're familiar with like Carl Jung's archetypes, but they're basically sort of innate ways of looking at the world. Like a couple would be a warrior is someone who will create a small band of people and go out and create, you know, fulfill their mission. A ruler is somebody who wants to create a kingdom and look after the people within it. A caregiver is somebody who gets the most out of life from like one-to-one relationships and taking care of people. Like these things are programmed, programmed somebody the wrong word. Like we're born with predispositions to particular ways of thinking. And that's part of what mindset is all about. You know, when you understand your approach to life, then you can understand and appreciate other people's approaches much more, and you can find what your groove is. I mean, even something simple as well, like Myers-Briggs, the personality typing test. Again, mm-hmm. That's just about like a cognitive style, you know, about like how you think. Are you someone who wants structure and plans? Are you someone who's like more creative and more reactive and adaptable? You know, understanding yourself at that level is what mindset means to me. It's how you perceive the world, what happens when you do, and how you react to it. It's the everything, Jules.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love you sharing more context on that. And I'm curious, you know, after working with, you know, 300 plus different entrepreneurs over the last however many years, when you start this inquiry with someone into looking at their mindset and the way that they've perceived the world and how it's informing, you know, the lens that they're looking through, what are some of the things that you find most people either are missing or some of the most common gaps that you identify that also might be relevant to some of those tuning in as a way to begin a self-inquiry with their own work?
Well, look, I mean, at the base level, a lot of people are not ever even asked those questions. You know, people are not thought about in any real depth about, you know, their particular thinking style, about their mission on this planet. And it doesn't have to be to create the next Tesla. You know, those archetypes that are referred to, like they're all equally important. You can't do it without all of those different types and appreciating what they've got. So I think like at the base level, just opening that door is one major thing. And the other thing I would say is that, particularly with the client group that I deal with, just that level of challenge that you're able to point out those things. You know, there was somebody, one of my entrepreneurs I was talking to the other day, that the sort of the power dynamics in the conversation. Just to put a bit of frame on that, like the stage of entrepreneur that I deal with, when they've come through that journey and they've assembled that team, they are like, demigod's a little strong, right? But you know, they hold this really weird position, and the dynamics that are around that are tricky. So the benefit of somebody like me going in is that my sole function is to, you know, challenge them to become the people that they want to become, to take them up to the next level. You know, I've got permission to do that and to point out things about, you say you want this, but your behavior is that. Or do you realize that you're doing this to your people? So being able to point out those blind spots. I mean, obviously I'm going to fly the flag for coaches here, right? You know, what can I tell you? I'm going to fly the flag for coaches because I'm a coach. But you just can't see it. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with a Johari window, but Johari window is about these different elements of yourself to say, you know, this is what I know and I show to the world. This is what I know, but I don't show to the world. And then there's a blind spot around, this is what the world sees, but I can't see it. So, you know, when you look at the gaps in terms of people reaching their next level, it's the awareness first, you know, to reflect on, all right, so I understand these are my behaviors. Reflections are on a weekly basis, I would recommend, or after a critical moment around what really happened there. You know, how was I acting this week? Is it in alignment with who I want to become? And having somebody there that can challenge you, it doesn't have to be a coach necessarily, but you do have to give someone explicit permission to challenge you. And I don't think that happens often enough.
Yeah, I would so agree with that. I think permission is, you know, such a word. A friend of mine likes to call it per my mission, to really open up the space for it. And,
yes,
you know, it is it. I mean, I can imagine just walking around and someone just actually asking you, you know, those questions. Or I think safety, and I'd be curious your take on this as well, is such a big part of it as well, is that, you know, it's hard to be vulnerable and to open up. And I want to get a little bit into your story as well, because I know, you know, you came from an IT background and you were working, you know, more of a conventional job. And then you had this pivot, which is what has opened up this whole conversation. But I think most of us often don't even have the space to even feel like they can share. And I'm just, yeah, imagine you might've dealt with that at some point in your life as well.
For sure. And do you know, Jules, like, see early on in my, I'm quite a direct and intense dude, right? There's just no escaping that. That's who I am. And that, you know, that serves me well, but I just need to watch that sometimes. And there were points in my earlier coaching career where I definitely pushed people to places that wasn't helpful. Because it was like progress. One of my values is progress, right? So there's a, that drives me, and I can't, there's a part of me, I guess, sometimes it feels like I can't understand why would you not want to push yourself to your limits, you know? But I didn't ask them for permission to sort of push them. I'm not talking about like, you know, I put somebody in a psychiatric ward, or, you know, I'm not talking about like I really pushed them, you know, that way. But there were people that just needed something a bit different from me at times, maybe more of a hug. I mean, I do have a rule that everybody has access to one hug per year from me, so use it wisely. But you know what I mean? The whole thing about safety, the sort of the permission to do that, and the permission from their side to say stop, you know, like stop what you're doing now. I don't. That's not what I need at the moment. You know, let's just change the relationship or the nature of that for a few minutes. So yeah, I think like the safety thing is really important, and the permission and understanding what that person's motive is that's trying to help you. Like that's fundamental.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I do love the line of, you know, the value of progress and what can feel like intensity, but also I'll kind of relate to it as on the other side of like, you know, it's more introspection and nurturing, whether it's in the form of that hug or whatever it might be.
Sure.
But I think that's a line we all, at least as leaders, you know, and as visionaries or entrepreneurs, or, you know, whether it's in our family life or personal life, like how to walk that. And, you know, I was an athlete and, you know, we were talking a little bit, I've had a lot of interests over the years, intensity has definitely been one for mine. And at times it's come off like, Jules, you can be very intimidating. And I've had to learn how to see things that I couldn't see, which is our blind spot, which is why it's so valuable to have coaches like yourself, you know, in your court to be able to show you certain things. But I think navigating that line in yourself of when do you push and when do you exert, or when it's time to actually be in introspection, which can almost lead to more progress rather than if you just kind of kept drilling the nail. And I'm just curious, for some of them might be in this, you know, position right now, and let's just take current events, right? Here we are in the middle of this unprecedented time where a lot of businesses, a lot of challenges there, but there's also a lot of opportunity. And so we are inherently being asked to slow down, yet there's also momentum. And yeah, curious your thoughts on global perspective, but also in relation to this theme as well.
So there was a really interesting story today, around a ventilator. So there was, you know, there's a massive shortage of ventilators, and a doctor saw there was a different way to do it, and he spoke to a really small engineering firm. This happened in Wales. I don't know if you're familiar with UK geography, but Wales is a part, you know, it's
Americans,
slightly,
you know,
slightly further away than Loch Ness. But yeah, so Wales is just a part of the UK, but it's a small country, right? So this doctor had this idea for a ventilator, went to a really small family-run firm, and they had the product ready to go in 3 days. And the Welsh government have already put the order in for that to happen. Now, if you consider what would normally happen in that situation, particularly around healthcare, like how long would it take to get something like that into the marketplace and doing good and saving lives? 6 months? 12? You know, by that point, the innovation's dropped off. So what's interesting about the current situation is that the pressure is changing some of those rules because of the nature of the need. In some ways, I think it's a bit of a shame that it takes that level of pressure, you know, for things to actually move. But it does highlight what can be done. So it can sort of shift those paradigms as well. It's a tricky one for my entrepreneurs at the moment too, because you know, what's the opportunity? And one of them was talking about, like, I feel I might be taking advantage, you know, by setting up a business at the moment, but it's the need. Do you know, it's just thinking about, yes, this is this crisis, right? But there is still a need in the world. Like I say, I thought that was a really great, it was really interesting how that was like a perfect storm of innovation. Single visionary, not a committee. They got the product made really in a really agile way by a small family firm like that. When, you know, there was no big political thing, no huge manufacturing stuff to go through. you know, the right partner, and then access to that customer base. Like, that's so hard for entrepreneurs, you know, especially in healthcare or education. don't start a healthcare education business, anyone that's listening. But do you know what I mean? Just that perfect storm, I thought, was really fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, coming back to need, I think it's such an interesting question, need and the pressure intersection. And coming back to that on a personal level, I'd love to talk about your transition into this world a little bit, because I imagine, you know, in the IT world and where you were before, you know, you had experience, like you said, a certain degree of success, yet there was this underlying need, probably with external pressure, of like, you know, this is making weird paychecks or whatever it might have looked like. Sure. How did you navigate those two variables? And then how did it ultimately pivot you? And, you know, also with the perspective that some of the people right now might be in that situation, or frankly, due to the circumstance we just talked about, might be, you know, that circumstance might have just pushed upon them involuntarily as well. So.
So I think a key thing to consider here is, if you are sitting in a job and you are asking yourself, I wonder if I'm in the right job, you're not. Like, the mere fact that you ask yourself that question means that you're not, because when you are, you don't ask yourself that. You know, yeah, you can have doubts about, like, you know, going outside your comfort zone and stuff like that. But as soon as you start asking yourself, is this the right thing for me? It isn't. And you've got to do something about it. The problem I had was that the pain wasn't horrendous. Do you know, like, the job I was in was reasonably challenging. You know, I was making decent money, blah, blah. But there just came, like, for me, it was an epiphany moment of walking into work, same way that I'd walked like 1,000 times before. And just going, what is this? You know, I can't do this anymore. And then it wasn't like, I know exactly what I want to do, but it was going, I know the area that I'm interested in. I am interested in people's minds. You know, somebody close to me had a really serious mental health problem. And I remember going to visit them and thinking, how is anybody supposed to get better here? And it wasn't, I'm not saying that as a denigration of the, you know, the care that's provided, because, you know, there's resources to consider, all this stuff, right? It's not as simple as just going that should all be better. I mean, it should, but it's more complex. But it got me interested in, I guess, another spark to look at people's minds. So from there, I did a psychology degree, which was a weird thing as well, because I felt like I did that degree because I needed an educational establishment's permission to go into a different career, you know?
We've all been there, right? I need this so that I can, rather than like, well, what do you actually want? versus the roundabout process, we think.
Yeah, like, I did it distance learning, and I did a 4-year degree in 2 years. So I'm just saying, you know, I'll take the medal for that. But there was no evidence that I needed to do that. It was all just in my head around, you know, I was quite smart at school, and then, you know, I went to university, blah, blah. But then that's what's ingrained in my head, that to do the next thing, I need that bit of paper from, and who knows? I don't think that I did, you know. But anyway, so I did that. And then just pivoting around, going, like, I did a bit of volunteering and stuff in mental health. It wasn't the right thing for me, though, because I didn't feel that I could move the needle enough. You know, it would only ever get to a point where life was okay for the client group that I was working for. Not exceptional. I just wasn't the guy to do that, you know. So then I went and set up my own business, a social enterprise, helping young people. Oh yeah, I worked for a UK charity with young people before that. And then I set up my own business, helping young people, a social enterprise. It was a retail store designed to give them experience. I have zero interest in retail. It was, you know, it was fashion and art, right? Which I have nothing about, absolutely nothing about. But I wanted to do it to help those young people. And then from there, I'm really interested in societal change and macro change, and business is a way to do it. So from there, it was this, with this accelerator, the world's largest free accelerator, which Entrepreneurial Spark, working there changed my life 100%. Great visionary leader there, totally, totally changed my life. And then from there, I've gone, okay, now I know that it's this specific client group that I want to work with at that traction point. The startup guys, I need too much structure to work with the startup guys, because they're still moving around. And to be honest, Jules, they don't have any money anyway. And the guys at the other end of that, it's too big. you know, things don't move fast enough for me. Like in a big corporate, it's too slow. It's oil tanker slow. So I guess the story really there is going, when you have that thing, just take whatever the step is. Don't sit and try and plan the step forever, you know, and look for that perfect step. Like go and volunteer in something that you're interested in. Go and have a conversation with somebody that, you know, that you get excited about when you see what they're doing or whatever that topic is. You know what it is. I don't know about like the secret and stuff, but there, you know, that the attraction. But I do believe in focus. You know, when you're clear on, I want to take another step, then you'll start looking, like things will, you'll notice things that you didn't notice before. And then you'll take another little half step towards another half step. So it's not about the perfect leap. It's just about the next step.
Yeah, so good. I relate to a similar process I have in myself. I call it rapid visioning, but it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's like creating in real time, moment by moment by moment. And I think that's such good perspective. And I know the path for you, you know, hasn't been necessarily easy or simple. And coming back to mindset and the framework, you know, I think at the end of the day, to take each step, at least in my own experience, like, you know, I'm the common denominator of who I go to bed with at night and who I wake up with in the morning and who I'm with, you know? So like at the end of the day, it's like my mindset, my frame that keeps me in the game. And so when you come up against yourself and for those that might be in, you know, challenging decision points right now, what are some of the practices that you use or some of the things that, you know, you do for yourself or whether it's with your clients that keeps you, you know, in that step and then that next step?
There's a great book from a lady called Annie Duke, which is called Thinking in Bets. And she's a professional poker player. And I think this is a really important principle around decision making, because if you think about it, how many decisions do you expect to get right? You know, at the point of a decision, of course you expect to get it right because you're making that decision. But if you think, well, actually, that isn't going to happen. Do you know, like there are things that I am going to get wrong along the way. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it is like, do you actually need to make that decision now? Like, what is the reason that you have to make that decision right now? I would say there is a propensity for people take longer to make. There's more people that are procrastinating over a decision than jumping around making loads and loads of, you know, bad decisions. So it's just about thinking that it's a bet. Like you can look at the, you know, the pros and cons list and all of these things, but there are principles here around, is this going to move me one step forward? Is this going to do more harm than good? You know, is that doing things, you can use a tool like a pre-mortem, which is where you put yourself in the worst possible outcome from what you're about to do. And then you think, well, what
pre-mortem.
What? Yes, goody. It's Gary Klein, a guy, Gary Klein. But we use it for like the bigger decisions, you know. Here's the worst case scenario. Okay, what actually happened that led to that? You know, and then you can start to mitigate for it. But when it comes down to it, there's just a line where you've just got to trust your intuition. And I don't mean that in a glib way. You know, you've got 100 trillion neural connections in your brain. You know more than you have conscious access to. Now, I'm not saying that you just go around going, hey, I'm never going to take any data into consideration. You know, I'm just going to toss a coin, you know. But you just have to learn to trust yourself, because there's no decision that I've made that prevents me from doing the next thing. You know, of course, I've made bad decisions. You know, everybody does. But if I look at it right now, what decision in the past is stopping me from taking the next step? There isn't one. And it's the decisions that I did take, you know, like quitting the job, starting up my own business, pivoting around, starting this business now, making a decision about the client group I work with. You know, it's those decisions that do lead you down your path. So I think there's a bit of a long answer there, but the short of it is about trust yourself and find some rules that work for you, like, is this going to do more good than harm?
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Trust yourself, listeners. We've got just another question or two, and then we're going to jump into the rapid fire round. And right after that, we've got an amazing giveaway that Joe has got. So stay tuned for that. So, you know, Joe, my last question for you is really around your tolerance to risk and uncertainty. And I think these are two things, whether, you know, they're very alive in the world in this exact moment. But I think as human beings, you know, my belief is we tend to orient, you know, towards certainty and stability rather than risk. You know, and uncertainty. And so how do you build your tolerance for those two things, whether it's with the group that you work with? But any last final words on that before we jump into the rapid fire round? Because I believe that they're, you know, crux, foundational pillars in this whole equation, is that relationship.
So if there's people that are listening that want to be entrepreneurs, whatever the plan is on day one is wrong. Do you know what I mean? That is not the plan. So you have to be willing to accept that. If you are somebody who craves certainty, you are unlikely to make it in the early stage of entrepreneurship. I don't class myself as an entrepreneur because I had a wee laugh there because I actually do crave certainty. And what I do for my clients is that I go in at that point where the foundation of this business needs structure and certainty. Every time, entrepreneur, you turn your lens back to it, you're creating a state of flux and you're not focusing on where you can go and create those opportunities. What I would say about risk and uncertainty though is comfort zone. Like the things that you want to do, you know, there are like people that I want to approach. There's a guy who is like a huge philanthropist, Tom Hunter, his name is. And I want to, in Scotland, like entrepreneur, philanthropist guy, I really want to try and get closer to him. And there's part of me going, do you know this guy, billionaire, does he really care what I've got to say? You know what I mean? Like, it's just that sort of thing, that doubt that comes in. But it's about the best way for people to push through that, and certainly for me as well, is just the accountability. Because I know the person that I want to become. And my head will trick me it'll allow me to talk myself out of doing certain things like that, because it'll be like, oh, it's not the right time, you're not ready, it's not ready. But accountability changes all of that. Because when you make a commitment to somebody else, and if you're using an accountability partner, the best accountability partners is that is what their role is. If you've got an accountability partner that you don't feel bad about saying, oh, I didn't do it, you know, I didn't do the action, that's not going to work, right? Or if you're accountability partner is a romantic partner and you're likely to destroy your relationship, like, don't use them either. But the accountability of looking somebody in the eye, we've got a group that every Monday, it's like a 15 minute call, and it's like, did you do that one thing that you said you were going to do this week? And it's all we're doing is helping each other become the people that we actually want to be, and not allowing our minds to talk us out of taking the bold action that we want. So that's what I would really say about that sort of risk and uncertainty. There are people that, you know, I'll stop talking in a sec, but there's a gene for risk that people have. And there's, you know, if you look at prison populations, there's a disproportionately high number of them have this gene. And entrepreneurs have that gene as well. Like, not exclusively, but, you know, it's a real thing. So there's a genetic element to your predisposition to risk, as well as that archetype, as well as that cognitive style. It's all just about understanding yourself. But if you want to develop, accountability is the way to do it.
Yeah, so good. I love all of that. And for those that have been really digging this conversation, stay tuned for the giveaway that's going to come up just after the rapid fire round. But talking about the predisposition, you know, my dad, I was the oldest of five girls, and he worked Wall Street in New York City. And I remember when I began my entrepreneurial journey, you know, he did not understand, like, in his world, it was very much a certain trajectory oriented career that he did very well in. But I mean, we would have these like big arguments, you know, it was like, you're being so irresponsible and blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, many, many years later, obviously it's a different story, but I do think it is fascinating. And I get curious to investigate that more. So a little homework for myself for this conversation, like, yeah, let's study your predisposition to risk.
When you look at that lens, like, that is coming from a good place. This is what I mean about these cognitive styles and understanding perspectives. People are not saying those. Well, I don't know about your individual circumstance, but I'll generalize a little bit there. But, you know, the perspective of, I genuinely believe this is the right thing, do you know? And I can almost have a vague approximation of somebody else's, you know, motives and perspectives, but you can't know them. It's the same as like saying, I understand exactly what love means to you. Of course I don't. You know, like all I can do is like approximate that thing. And this is what happens in a lot of these dynamics as well. So that level of understanding about each other, you know, when you understand your own mindset and the cognitive styles and you look at other people as well, it totally shifts your level of appreciation of what others can bring. And I'm sure your dad loved you very much, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And he did. And I think eventually, you know, when we weren't in the thick of it, we eventually got to that meeting years after. But such good advice there. So let's jump into the rapid fire round. Unconventional lifers, I've been getting a ton out of this. Hope you have as well. So Joe, first question for you, lightning round. If you really knew me, you would know what? Go ahead and fill in the blank.
How passionate I am about human progress.
Love it. Next question. If we were a fly on the wall in Edinburgh and we were observing you out through your life, what would be some snapshots we would see beyond mindset, you know, extraordinaire consultant Joe? Like what other scenarios and scenes would we see in the life?
You'd see me doing some ultra marathons. You would see me not finishing at the top three, I can assure you. I'd be out in nature a lot, you know. I'd be on the beach. I'd be alone quite a lot of the time. I like that reflective time. You'd find me there a lot. You'd find me in the library as well. Not reading the books, but I just love to be around that vibe. It's just cool, man. There's just something cool about that accumulated knowledge that nobody's reading anymore. You know, nobody's reading a book from the library anymore, right? But yeah, you would find me in those places. But you would find me alone quite a lot of the time when I'm not. And that's a choice. That's my reflection there. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I live up in the mountains in Colorado, like in the middle of national forest,
awesome.
My dog, and I spend a lot of time alone as well. But it's a choice, and I find the reflective points are so necessary, in my opinion, to really, you know, keep evolving. And I'm all for company as well, but
yeah,
I love that you naming that. So yeah. So next question for you, what is one food that you enjoy eating that maybe some of our listeners might not know about? It could be like local to Scotland, or it could just be something generic as well. But what's one food that you enjoy eating?
Well, I tell you, anything that my mum made when we were growing up. I mean, I don't know what she's doing. Like, I could have the same ingredients, the exact same ingredients. I could be standing there and be, you know, following it. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what she's putting in it. I don't know what the magic dust was, but it was everything she made was amazing. That's a really strong memory around food. I remember actually going to other people's houses and being, quite frankly, disappointed by the level of cooking from other people's parents. I suppose like the national thing is haggis. I do like haggis. The key with haggis is to taste it before you find out what it's made from, because it's like sheep's organs that it's made from. I've just blown that. I've just blown it for all your listeners. Sorry. But yeah, haggis is an interesting choice, you know, because there's a lot of animals in this country. But curiously, and I don't know what it is about Scottish people, we chose to make the national dish, not the meat of the animal, but the stomach and the lining of the animal. You know, that was the choice we made. I don't know who made that decision.
So great. There's another inquiry into human behavior
Exactly.
All of that for So good. Last question for you, Joe. What does living the unconventional life mean to you?
Trust yourself. Like, you have your answers. You know, if you go and you explore them, you've already got them. You know, people sometimes, I think, might be looking for somebody else to give them that. Like, there's this massive thing. And you'll know this because I've seen, you know, the stuff that you've done. I saw about the wakeboard incident and all that stuff. Like, taking responsibility for your own journey. That's what it's about. And being around people that are doing the same thing, like that are on that journey as well. That is what the unconventional life is for me. take responsibility, trust yourself, and find the people that are living that same type of life.
Yeah, so good. Joe, tell us about the giveaway that you've got for one of our listeners.
Yeah, sure. So like I mentioned before, I work specifically with a set of entrepreneurs that have got through their traction point and are looking to go up to the next level. Now, typically, they've started the business from scratch. They're at least 2 years in, maybe two to four years in, a team of less than 20. And now it's about, you know, I don't know what's going on with this business. I want it to go up to the next level. It's not quite right. Probably don't have enough A players in that team. And I'll help you to think about what's the strategic approach. Who actually are you as a leader? And how are you going to foster this culture within your business to create the foundations? So I'd be more than happy to give a coaching session out to a listener around that. And we can explore some of the challenges that they're facing if they're in that particular niche.
Yeah, amazing. Such a generous offer. Unconventional Lifers, you can head over to unconventionallifeshow.com, click on the giveaway tab and apply to be a part of that giveaway. And if you really, really, really want a chance to talk to Joe in this capacity, feel free to send us an email and let us know why. And Joe, for those that want to learn more about your work, more about what you're doing in the world, and also just stay in touch, what's the best way for listeners to go ahead and do all of that?
So mindsetexperts.co.uk is the website, and I'm reasonably active on LinkedIn. I put bits and pieces of content out there as well. I think I am just linkedin.com Joe Trodden. There are not a lot of Joe Troddens in the world, you know, so I should be reasonably easy to find. And I'm nowhere else. I'd pick one channel and do it well is what my mantra here. So LinkedIn and the website mindsetexperts.co.uk. And look, I would love to speak to, you know, we're talking about the giveaway there. I've got a suite of tools. There's a lot of stuff that's going on at the moment. There are things that I've got that could just solve a specific problem or just give people a different perspective, whether that is around, you know, the dynamics in a team meeting, whether it is about a strategic approach. So that, you know, I've got loads of little bits and pieces. If people wanted to get in touch, just tell, the more specific the problem, the more chance I can help. Totally open.
Amazing. So generous. And Unconventional Lifers, we will throw all of those notes for you up on the website at unconventionallifeshow.com. Look for Joe Trodden under the show notes. Joe, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with all of us and to be a part of this conversation. It was great diving in with you this afternoon or this evening to wherever you are right now. So.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I really love your energy, Jules. Like, this is a transatlantic video call without the video even. And I can feel your energy from like thousands of miles away. So it's amazing to speak to people like you. I really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, so good. Unconventional Lifers, we will have more amazing content and shows coming up to you guys soon. Go over to the website, check everything out. Thanks again, Joe, and thanks again, everyone.